The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan, and with me on The Breakfast Grill today are Marianne Clark, Hatting from the United Nations Children's Fund, or UNICEF, and Dr. Hatini Zainuddin, founder of Yayasan Chowkit. We're here to discuss the urgent question of stateless children and what we can do to address the problem. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. We'll include your questions in the conversation. I want to begin with this front page story, this morning's Malay Mail. Help for stateless top scorer. And it's a heartwarming story in the face of it. Minister of Higher Education has come in to help an individual who is stateless to achieve her dream of going to university. Now, apparently, it's a positive story to tell. Tini, I want to begin with you.
Yeah.
When you saw this headline, is this something that made you think, yes, we're moving in the right direction?
I think it's a wonderful positive step in the right direction because we have these cases coming out yearly. Almost every year. And it's actually the first time I've heard where actually all the different agencies and the different people in the different government agencies, are actually coming together to help this individual. It's heartwarming for sure. It's encouraging.
Okay, Marianne, I want to ask you, this is about an individual, but we're talking about a problem that affects thousands. And of course, we'll come back to the question of the numbers, but thousands. Can interventions like this ultimately be the model for the solution, the personal intervention of an individual in government towards an individual who is stateless? Is that the way to go forward?
Well, obviously it's not. You need a comprehensive policy to address the issue of children who don't have documents which stop them having access to education. And there may be many more Rosiannas who are just not known. And there may be some who have the potential to become like her and be high flyers, but just don't have access to education and can never fulfill their full potential.
Now, Tini, back to you about the numbers, because I know it's a contentious issue. We've had, I believe in 2015, the Home Affairs Minister said that there weren't any stateless children. And then the subsequent year, he, in a response to a question in Parliament by PKR MP N. Surendran, said that, in fact, 290,437 stateless children are residing in Malaysia. But the last Friday, we had a rather confusing story that suggested he thinks it's only 2,000. And in fact, he asked, and Sina Harian's headline was, Sila Tunjuk Bukti, where's the proof? Show us the proof about these huge numbers. What's going on about these numbers?
I think we have to go back and backtrack a bit to what the definition of statelessness is. And there seems to be a lot of confusion here in terms of looking at what the definition is first. Second of all, it's very hard. There's no documented methodology in enumerating the exact numbers. So the numbers are going to vary. That's quite a big jump from 2,000 to 290,000. And I think the numbers are somewhere in between. I don't know, maybe higher too.
Help us first with the definition then.
Well, first of all, we all have to agree and look at the UN definition of what statelessness, what childhood statelessness is, for example. It's basically a person who's not been recognized by any country, who is not recognized as being a citizen of any country. And therefore, if you start with that person with having no citizenship in any country, then they will have no access to lots of different services and programs and access to rights. So when we're talking about statelessness and if we agree on that definition, then we can move forward. The point is that we don't agree on that definition.
We don't? Okay. Marianne, this issue of definition and childhood statelessness is interesting because when I looked at some of the literature on it, it seems like some kids are in the process of trying to appeal on the basis of some provisions in our constitution to become a citizen. And they do it, it's race against time because once they hit 21, they're no longer available. I mean, this provision of this remedy is no longer available to them. They become adult stateless people. Should we just be focusing on the children? What about the young adults who've graduated from child to now adult statelessness?
Well, obviously, if you're a stateless adult, then your children by default will become stateless as well. So it's an issue that needs to be looked at comprehensively. If you address the childhood statelessness issue, you're sort of stopping the incidence in growing. So I'd also like to come back to the remuneration of counting of these stateless. If you don't have documentation, you're invisible. So we can only have guesstimates of how many there are in Malaysia. And there are many different categories, as Tini pointed out, of children who, for various reasons, may not have documentation or not be recognized by the state as being a Malaysian or from any other nationality. So one recommendation would be to have a comprehensive mapping, because you can't have policy without evidence.
Now, the question is whether the situation in Malaysia is quite at a critical level, right? I believe that in the press we've had the question of statelessness in Sarawak, for instance, and I think some media coverage has been given to that, over 2,000 stateless people in the state of Sarawak. Indians in the peninsula, again, have come on for some focus in the media for being stateless or being overrepresented in the category of statelessness. But if we turn to the Home Minister, he says that, in fact, most children who are stateless come from foreign countries. They're from Indonesia, Philippines, and Myanmar. Tini, what do we know? I mean, your sort of experience tells you about the nature of statelessness in it. Who is stateless in Malaysia?
There are different categories. The two that I think are underrepresented and actually crucial is the statelessness of foundlings, children who are abandoned, babies who are abandoned in Malaysia with no documents. They're, I think, of great concern because nobody knows how to trace their parents, and the burden of proof seems to be policy-wise that the child find the biological mother, which is impossible in these circumstances with foundlings. Children who have been trafficked, baby selling cases who've been identified, babies and victims of baby selling who've been identified, children who've been trafficked, there's no way to be able to trace their documents. Children where one parent is Malaysian, one parent is not, is technically not stateless. We seem to confuse the issue of at risk of statelessness and the whole issue of stateless. If one parent is Malaysian, technically the child is not stateless. But if
they become stateless
because of gender discrimination sort of issues.
Because women can't confer their citizenship on their children. Okay.
Yeah.
I want to, Marion. Like to,
can I just add, there is, let's not forget also the indigenous communities,
yes,
and the Orang Asal communities that are, although you could argue are Malaysian, they're also the Bajalau, the nomadic communities. And so it's not just foreigners. There are many Malaysians who do not have documentation for one reason or another.
Marion, I want to just refer to a report from the UN High Commission for Refugees, because you're not from there, you're from UNICEF, the Children's Fund. But in a report titled, I'm Here, I Belong, The Urgent Need to End Childhood Statelessness, seven countries were picked. Malaysia was one of them. Cote d'Ivoire, Dominican Republic, Georgia, Italy, Jordan, Thailand, and Malaysia. Is our situation in Malaysia, embody a particular character of the problem that we should be pulled up in a report for special focus?
The report is really highlighting the issue of discrimination and exclusion of these populations. And, you know, we're here discussing the issue of stateless. In Malaysia, there are children who do not have documentation and therefore, by default, are subject to this exclusion
law. The question, I guess, what a lot of people will ask is that, is it so bad in Malaysia? I mean, yes, we could have these problems around the world, but in Malaysia, is it so bad that we should be...
I don't think it's a matter of it being so bad. It's a matter of addressing the issue, and I think it's easier to address the issue in Malaysia. Because in many cases, the children are not foreigners. They are Malaysians, born and bred in Malaysia, with no proper documents to prove that they are Malaysians. And there's a whole... That's really the issue. The idea of I belong also, I think, has to do with... Our reservations on the CRC and on Article 2 and Article 7 with the right to identity and right to discrimination against certain groups. And I think that's part of the reason why we were chosen. And it's really, I think it's a good thing because it highlights the issue and it's something that's solvable.
And that's
I belong campaign and the report is also in line with the Agenda 2030, which Malaysia is committed to. And there is a specific target, 16.9, that calls on all states to provide nationality and identity to its citizens. So I think that this report is very much in line with that and is something that Malaysia has signed up to.
I'm speaking to Marianne Clark-Hatting from UNICEF Malaysia, as well as Dr. Hartini Zainuddin, founder of Yayasan Chowkit. Next up, we talk about the best policy options and how preventable stateless children, the situation of stateless children is. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning, if you just joined us. I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me on the Breakfast Grill today, Dr. Hartini Zainuddin, founder of Yayasan Chowkit, and Marianne Clark-Hatting of United Nations Children's Fund of Malaysia. You can be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Leave your name so we know who you are. I want to quote something from the I Belong campaign. It says, "No child needs to be stateless. Whether a child has been left stateless, because of discriminatory national laws or other reasons, childhood statelessness is entirely preventable." Now, if it's entirely preventable, if that's what the experts are saying, why does it continue to happen? Tini.
Well, in the cases that I've looked at, birth registration or the lack of birth registration is the number one issue. Marianne and I were actually talking about this earlier, and she actually reminded me of that as well. If you don't have birth registration, then technically you don't exist and you're invisible. And you need it to be able to have some kind of legal document to say that I exist and I'm here and this is who I am.
But couldn't the state, Marianne, go on.
Yeah, no, I'd say there are reasons for that as well, yeah. Right? I mean, why? Yeah, obviously, in Malaysia, there are mechanisms to get birth registration. But for some communities, the lack of awareness of the importance of having that documentation, mm-hmm. the fact that the parents themselves may not be documented, in some remote communities, literacy might be an issue. And then also distance from the place where the child is born to the service or the NRD office.
Are we creating hurdles for people? I mean, couldn't we just make it automatic? If you're a child, and the presumption would be that if you're an abandoned child, chances are you were born in this country, that automatically you get an identity. I mean, what prevents the law from discarding the need for documentation for the search for biological parents and the determination of their citizenship status? I mean, what stops us from...
It's lack of resources and I think coordination. I know that Deputy Prime Minister came up in the papers a couple of days ago and said, the NGOs and the organizations and the agencies need to work together to prevent statelessness from happening and stuff. And it's true. I think sometimes, there is no coordination, there is no collaboration, there is no trust in determining who's stateless, who's not, helping one another to make sure that all children have a birth certificate, ensuring that, we can reduce the risk of statelessness at the very least. And I think if we listen to that call, the Deputy Prime Minister's call for everyone to work together, we'd be on a better footing. That's one. On the other hand, our policies need to be changed. If you look at the adoption law is from 1954. That's one of the reasons because people buy babies, right? And you falsify papers. And that's another reason why when you find children who are bought and sold, you falsify those documents. And when you pull them, the child is rendered stateless. That's another issue. We need to review the adoption law. We need to look at the issue of risk of statelessness and reduction of statelessness. We need to look at different ways in which we can work together, whether it's a short-term, medium, or long-term goals and objectives to address the issue, which will finally, I hope, my dream is that, you know, we're signatories to the conventions on reduction of statelessness and statelessness, but that's long term. Try with different things: access to education, access to health. We can start there.
Marion, what is preventing us? If we look at other countries, and perhaps countries that have gone from a situation that was not ideal to one that was better because they did something about it. You know, could you give us an example, or could you give us a sense of how easy or difficult this might be?
I mean, there are examples around the world. For example, the Biharis, I think, in Urdu-speaking population in Bangladesh, about who were then given Bangladeshi status. But there's also Estonia and Latvia, who are looking at now sort of nationality and identification documents for children who are born there of foreign parents. So there are examples around the world that Malaysia could learn from. However, I think, you know, it's important as well for a state to have measures in place where they can, they need to be able to verify where the child comes from. The problem is here that some of the evidentiary documentation is very cumbersome and out of reach for some. And this is why, as I mentioned, it's important to have a comprehensive mapping. You know, if a parent is undocumented and for generations they've been undocumented, it's going to be very hard then to come up with the documentation that's required now to make their child to pass identity or nationality to their children.
Marion, do you think the problem is about nationalism and that we see citizenship, in this country at least, as a privilege, not a right?
It is privilege. You know,
and it is a privilege, isn't
it,
Tini?
Right.
It's not right. And this is extraordinary because, and I'm just going to quote the former coordinator of my DAFTA Special Implementation Task Force, Dato N. Siva Subramaniam, when talking about solving the problem of Indian statelessness in the peninsula. He says, we're not asking them to bend the law. We're asking them for our rights. And this is very interesting because the issue is, why not confer? I mean, are we looking at a possible scenario that if Malaysia is lax or easy, if they bring down the barriers, there'll suddenly be a rush of foreigners wanting to have their children here, of depositing their children here? I mean, are we looking at huge burdens for the state as a result of taking a much more liberal, generous view of statelessness and the need and the solutions to resolve the problem? Tini?
That's a myth. The whole barbarians at the gates, you know, people rushing in and dumping their child in and hiding behind the trees, that's a myth. That's not going to happen. We've got economic mechanisms in place to be able to ensure that nobody does that. And nobody, our system is set up so well that anybody who adopts a child, like you said, it's you know, is not going to be able to bestow that citizenship onto their biological parents, etc. And there's no you know, conspiracy to be able to do this in en masse. It's really, I think it's a couple of things. One, the definition. The different categories of statelessness, who is stateless, who's not. Some are politically motivated. Some are low-hanging fruits like foundlings. I think
the government needs to, say also low-hanging fruits.
Yeah, and so, yes, exactly.
But there are examples. I mean, I think for the Tamil community in the north, the government has come and found a solution. I think in Sarawak, the government there is also making efforts to regularize and provide documentation for its citizens there. So there are examples within Malaysia, but what's lacking is a comprehensive approach. And as Tini just mentioned, there are many different categories. So you need to have a mapping and then have policy policy measures to regularize. Yes, and I'd like to just stress that there is a difference between, you know, there is also a sort of this perception that birth registration and nationality sort of combine, right? So there is a difference. There's a right for every child to be registered at birth, to have a name and an identity. And that is different from the right also to nationality. I mean, the two don't necessarily go hand in hand. And this is, I think, one of the reasons as well why Malaysia has kept a reservation against the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child for Article, I think it's 2 or 7, Article 7.
What does that article state? What is it at stake in the article?
It's the right to the right to identity, and the interpretation being such, the right to identity is also by default right to nationality, and it isn't necessarily. But without a birth registration, you're incredibly vulnerable to exploitation. You don't exist, right? So even if you're taken up by authorities, so on, as whether for immigration reasons or so on, you can't prove who you are, where you're from. You can't, or if you know, in criminal proceedings, you know, are you a child? Are you not a child? All these issues, apart from not being able to access public services, which is also your basic rights, such as education or free health care and so on.
Right, on that score, in fact, the Deputy Prime Minister is also the Home Minister. He announced that stateless children whose citizenship applications are being processed can attend school. So that sounds like a generous gesture on the part of the Home Ministry. But Tini, coming back to the question of I would say public perception, right? Yeah. You know, when Malaysians read these stories, do you think they're moved? I mean, you know, do they think, well, who are these kids? Do we really want them here? And if we give them citizenship, will they become a burden for our society? You know, who's going to carry this? Is there a kind of compassion tax that I'll have to pay?
I write about the issue all the time. And yes, there's a lot of compassion and understanding, but there's a lot of education that needs to happen. First of all, the assumption that they are foreigners, they're not. Most of the time, stateless children were born here, and they live here, and they're not foreigners. And they belong here, and they're our children.
Is that how people
see
it? I mean, most people say, well, your parents are from Indonesia, then you're Indonesian. You have no right. Go back to Indonesia.
Yes, if you can prove that they have a passport and they're from Indonesia, they definitely are Indonesian.
But then they're not stateless.
But they're not stateless. That's the thing. Nobody seems to understand what stateless means. Stateless means you cannot. We go back to the definition. You're not recognized as a citizen of any country. You can't go anywhere. You can't go back. Go back where? You don't belong there.
I mean, obviously, there is public sympathy. I mean, the front page that you referred to at the beginning of this show, then, you know, that shows that there is a public sympathy. There have been many other cases that have been reported in the press.
Maybe just the liberal press.
I think the Deputy Prime Minister is now intervening, right, in a positive manner. So I think that shows that there is public sympathy. Yeah. But the issue is so complex that that's why I said you need to unpack it and understand who are the different categories. And let's not forget also that there are refugee and migrant children here who are born here, maybe from generations as well. And they also have trouble getting identity documents and having access to basic services and their basic rights to education, healthcare, and so on.
Marion, do you think that we, in sort of trying to skin this cat in a different way, that we don't think of these children as potentially an asset to our country? We don't think of them as individuals who can contribute if we give them full access to good health care and good education and opportunities. Is that an argument that just sounds a little mercenary and instrumental?
Can I interject one sec? I just want you to know that Albert Einstein was stateless. He was stateless for 4 years in between World War II before he went over to America. He was stateless. Can you imagine if there was no Albert Einstein? You know, that's like my best person I can think of. In terms of contribution, this girl that we're talking about in the Malay Mail,
Steve Jobs, can you imagine all these people who are stateless? For sure, it's an untapped potential. If you have children who are excluded from society, they living on the fringes of society, that is an issue for any country, any government. So it needs to be addressed. And again, I say, you know, having a comprehensive mapping of, you know, who's in the country, what are the categories, and coming up with policies to address this issue. It can be done and it should be done.
Is there political will? Very quickly, Atini, is there political will to redress this problem quickly?
I think there is more of political will. We just need to push it.
There's definitely a change in discourse, yeah. I think, a positive change in discourse.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having us again.
I'm speaking to Marianne Clark Hatting from the United Nations Children's Fund of UNICEF Malaysia, and also Dr. Hatini Zainuddin, founder of Yayasan Chow Kit. I'm Sharad Kutin, and this has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.